Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. And this is Carl with a special ISF-IST podcast. First off, I'd like to introduce, as always, my wonderful co-host, Rachel. Say hello, Rachel.
Hello, Rachel. Hello.
There you go. Well, like she always does, and like I always set her up. But today, we're very, very happy and pleased to welcome to the show a gentleman who has well near 350 credits on IMDb and probably at least 1,000 more uncredited voice actor credits. And we'd really like to welcome Doug Stone. Greetings. Thank you for coming on to the podcast, Doug.
Sure thing. Now, I am speaking to the chief deviants, right? I don't want to speak to any underling deviants. You are the chief deviant.
No. There's no question about it. I am the chief deviant, and Rachel is my handler.
I am a hench deviant at this point, but that's because I guard and protect the rabbit hole,
right,
which is one of our other shows. I'm a hench deviant here and a chief deviant over there, so it decides which side of the coin I want to be on today.
Gotcha. So you wear many hats.
But Doug, one of my cats
hearing me speak, so it's come in the room to join me. Hi, Mimi. How you doing, baby? I've got three cats here who, when they hear me speaking out loud, I'll rush in the room in the office and go, "What is it, Dad? You calling us?"
I have to keep my door closed because my cats do the same thing, only this is also my sewing room and office, and they really like to get destructive with my expensive fabric, so.
Gotcha. Well, I only close it if I'm, you know, especially during the pandemic, I'm doing a lot of recording from home, not going to studios, and I have a setup in my office for that, and I do close the door to keep out the kitties at that time. But other than that, they're allowed to come in. They're good. They don't bother the microphone or the wires or anything. They behave.
Well, that's good. It's always good to have cats. I'm definitely a cat.
Are you
person.
Sure you have real cats? Are they not like pod cats or something? They behave.
If I don't have real cats, I'm worried because somebody's licking my hand right now. So I hope I have real cats.
There you go.
Well,
podcast.
You are on the Deviant Legion Network. It could be any number of us.
So Doug.
Podcasts is a good joke too, by the way. I will acknowledge that.
So Doug, tell us a little bit about how you got into it, how you got started as far as a voice actor, and you as we were talking before the broadcast. You've been in it well over 40 years. So tell us a little bit about how that all happened.
Well, it all came down to sleeping with the right people right off the bat. I've been working since I was 16, full-time, self-supporting myself, and did a lot of other things, but I come from Canada originally.
Is that what they called it back in the day?
This is back in long ago, with the shoulder-length hair and if you're going to San Francisco and all that stuff, yeah. Haight-Ashbury, 68, graduate. But anyway, acting was just something I did as a hobby. I would do once in a while go do a play or something like that because it just didn't seem possible to ever make your living in Canada, certainly in my day at that time, as an actor. Very few people did. But at one point in 1982, I was working for a company, and they needed somebody to do some voiceovers for what they call scratch tracks. They were for Jell-O commercials, but they weren't going to be aired, but they wanted to time the commercial out before they got the real actor to do it. So they needed somebody who could actually read commercials properly to do that. And I auditioned just for a lark. They said, yeah, you're great. Come do it. Did it. After a while, they kept using me. They started to pay me. And I was doing theater at night, and I spoke to the gentleman who had a studio at this company. And I said, do you think I'm good enough to actually do this elsewhere and supplement my income with voiceover work? And he said, yeah, I do. and the light went on in my head because I hated all the 9-to-5, and I'd been a taxi driver, a furniture maker, a computer manager of computer security, a million different things for 15 years at that point. So I took a chance, quit my job, and made a demo tape, shopped it around in Toronto, managed to get some clients, and actually started to get paid to do a bit of voiceover, primarily commercials at that time. There wasn't animation really going on there. And was doing theater at night, formed my own troupe. I had a comedy troupe up there. We did improvisational comedy and written comedy. This is the days of the Kids in the Hall. I don't know if you know who they are, but they were my contemporaries
absolutely.
Up there. Okay, well, Scott.
I'm scratching your head. Correct.
Exactly. Well, Scott, those guys were all coming up the same time as me, and Scott was actually one of them was in my troupe for a little while before he was in the kids, Scott. But anyway, what happened was I was doing on-camera work, doing stage work, and was lucky enough to get the recommendation after doing an on-camera role in Canada, starring in a small film. The cinematographer sent me to an agent, and it was a big agent. And within a year, they got an audition for a cartoon that was going to be recording in Los Angeles called MASC, Mobile Armored Strike Command. This is a cartoon that aired on network in 85, 86. And I got three roles auditioning from Canada long distance, came to L.A., ended up with eight roles in the series, and got enough encouragement from people down here at the studio and agencies, et cetera, where I stayed. And from there was introduced to different people, met different agents, different studio heads, et cetera, and my career got going from there. And I got into directing. It's not on the IMDb very much, but I actually cast and directed a lot of stuff. I won six awards, six Golden Reel Awards for casting, supplied voices for TV shows and films, as well as anime and games. And so I was kind of there at the beginning of the advent when anime was really kicking off and when the games were really kicking off, was when I was already partially established in voiceover here in L.A.
Nice, nice. Now, when you're a voice actor, what exactly or how exactly do you record and how did you make the connections? Because particularly I'm very interested in what you're doing as far as the anime and the English language versions of everything that comes over from Japan.
Right. Well, the recording is different depending on what you're doing. A commercial is recorded alone with you and the clients. excuse me, if you're doing original animation pre-pandemic, if you're doing original animation, quite often you're in a room with all the other actors in a semicircle with each of you with your individual microphone, and you do it as if it was a radio play. You rehearse the entire cartoon and then record the entire cartoon. In the case of anime, you 99% of the time work alone with the director and engineer. The anime comes over from Japan. It is time-coded to the frame, 30 frames per second, and then it has to be adapted to English. And I used to do those adaptions as well to English from Japanese. So you get a translation, and you look at the mouth movements, and if you get adept enough at it, looking at the mouth movements, you can then time an English script to the existing mouth movements that were done in Japanese. So that script is done. It's approved. Then the director brings in the actors, and he's looking for actors who are both good at doing voiceover work, but also good at the timing that is required in the case of anime or any dubbing, be it live-action film dubbing or anime dubbing, any voice replacement work. That's also done in TV shows and films. And that's what's not really on the IMDb, is that I've done over 1,000 television shows and films, sometimes replacing people's voices on TV shows or matching their voices. Or maybe a film is done and there's a lot of swearing in it. When it used to go to network, before we had Netflix and HBO that allows swearing, if it was going to NBC or ABC, I might be matching Joe Pesci and doing what he said, but doing it without swearing. because he doesn't like to come in the studio. So you would, again, match the mouth movements but put in different words. So you're in there by yourself. In the old days, we did it to tape, so you just had to memorize the codes, the time codes, and start exactly the right time because they couldn't move anything. But with the advent of computers, now you get they beep you in. The computer automatically registers the time code where that mouth is going to start moving, and the computer in your headset will go beep, 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 and then you start to speak on the fourth imaginary beep, which puts you right on that opening mouth movement. And now, of course, with the computers, they can move everything too and place it. But it's still, they want actors who can pretty much nail the – they don't want to be moving everything. They want you to become really close to the existing mouth movements.
So all this contains things like, you know, timing and voice and that. You know, I'm a musician, so this makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it's very much like music, and a lot of the engineers are in fact guys who you can't make their full living here in LA as musicians, but they engineer a lot of these sessions. So I have a lot of friends, and there's some voiceover people who came out of the music industry too, because musicians often have that inner timing that is helpful for this kind of work, even as a performer. And they have vocal range if they're singers.
Right, exactly. Now I heard a little bit of you know, your voices that you've done over, you know, different types of voices. And that's something that's always fascinated me, because I've never been able to really change my voice that much. But, you know, you take a look at, you know, who I grew up with, Mel Blanc and Joe Alasky and all the WB people. Tell us a little bit about how you work in your different voices, and give us a couple of examples.
Well, I'm not a singer, but I love music, and I've always fascinated by music. Up until I just called you, I had my iTunes playing. Music is a huge part of my life, as is singing, and I've taken singing classes. I never could become a singer, but I did learn. It did help me with vocal placement and with vocal control, et cetera, et cetera. It is very much like singing. Every accent, if you were going to study accents, you'd find that different countries place their voices in different places in their vocal cords, or even in their chest or diaphragm, to create the sounds that they create. And it's no different when you're creating cartoon sounds. If you might be speaking through, this is a voice that's very much speaking through my nose, and I'm allowing a lot of air to come out, and it's all placed in the front of my mouth. There's nothing really pushing much from the diaphragm, but it's air and nasal.
If I'm talking like that, it's very much my throat, and I will burn.
If I don't get it into my chest, I'll burn my throat doing a voice like that.
If you're doing Danny DeVito, then you've got to know where a New Yorker, you got to know what the accent's about. But you also got to get the placement. And he's rolling. You got to let your throat roll. You hear that brrrr sound in Danny's voice.
Yep.
So you got to get
like
that kind of sound.
I know how to roll my R's, but at least I know how to do that.
It reminds me of that scene in Singing in the Rain where she's like, I can't stand him. I can't stand him.
Yeah.
No. I can't stand him. I can't stand him. and then, of course, it goes into the Gene Kelly and everything, and it's like the rain, the plane. And, yeah, wonderful tap thing, and it's all in the vocal office, and it's just one of the most hilarious and beautiful things, because I love the English language. I love hearing different accents and voices, and them just taking that and making so much fun of it really gets me going.
You can have a great time with it. To get into looping work, which is supplying voices for TV shows and films, which I did a lot of, and it's one of the highest paying vocal jobs you can get. You're paid essentially the same as a guest star who's just getting a SAG rate. You get residuals every time a TV show shows. So I did all the shows of the, a lot of the shows of the 80s and 90s, ER and Chicago Hope and et cetera. And then I formed my own group and I did all the Hercules and Xena TV shows. All 220 was my group of voice actors for which we still get residuals
from
that. So what got me into that was the accent work. It's a very difficult job to get into. And there was a loop group leader who had an East Indian producer who wanted to do a film, and he wanted actors. Hello, other kitty. My minnow Minu is in the room now. I've got two kitties. He wanted voice actors who could do an authentic East Indian accent. And I have been to India, and I have not practiced it for a long time, but I am not too shabby. So I did my East Indian accent. The producer said, this guy's really good. They ended up not doing the show, but the loop group leader, the lady who was in charge of that group, remembered me and hired me to do an Australian TV series. So I had to learn nasal placement and get my own Australian, because I didn't do an Aussie at that time, but I learned. And then from there, it kind of went off where they said, oh, this Doug Stone guy can do accents. And that got me a lot of work. So obviously, my point being, the more you can do, the more variation, the more you can master, and the greater your variation of skills, obviously, the more value you are to the industry and the more you can potentially work.
Oh, absolutely. And obviously, you are very valuable to this industry because even I have seen a lot of your work, some of your older stuff even. I mean, I grew up as a kid watching the Hercules and Xena series, so I have definitely seen some of your older stuff.
You heard me screaming, man. We were every villager, every monster, just about everything that wasn't the stars was us.
Ah, oh, geez. Wow. The last time a man said that to me, it was a lot sexier. But thanks.
I wish every man in your life.
What was that, Carl?
I said down, Rachel, down.
Yeah, and I'm supposed to be your handler.
Saying down, Rachel, down could feed right into the where she's going with all this. I don't know if that's the reason.
We're going right back down the rabbit hole on this one, Carl.
We're definitely going down.
Well, the rabbit hole is actually
now.
Down the rabbit hole with Rachel is actually my show that we do occasionally.
Sure.
So a little double entendre there.
Yeah. Or a triple entendre, I'm not sure.
So, one thing I do want to talk about, and one of the reasons we have you on the show, is that you are now featured in an episode of a new show that just dropped on Netflix, which
and
is
it's so
the
Resident
Evil anime. So tell us a little bit about that, Doug.
Resident Evil, yeah, that was cool. It's a nice title to be associated with. Quite a few people that I know, friends of mine in the industry, are involved in the show, and they shoot it. My understanding is they shoot it with real actors. They shoot it live with real actors, and then animate to what the real actors did. That's why it looks so lifelike, the characters, and then we revoice. It was dubbed. And I played the character Ryan in this particular one, an aide to the President of the United States. And, it's a role I auditioned for. You know, it varies. I've been at it long enough where there are quite often times when I don't have to audition, I'll just be cast because it'll be a director that I've worked with for 15 or 20, 30 years. And they just go, oh, Doug will be right for this. And they're kind enough to, you know, to contact me and give me the role. But for a lot of it, you still audition. Sorry?
I said you've got what we like to call speak cred.
Speak cred.
Yeah, that is street cred, because
so.
I don't think you're any sort of thug. You got speak cred.
I got talk cred, yeah. Voice cred. But in the case of Brian and this one, I did audition for it, and the clients chose me. And then I actually did it from home because it was during the pandemic that we recorded. I don't remember exactly when we recorded. It was about 7 months ago, 8 months ago. and I recorded on my home equipment, and you know, it's incredible what they can do, where I can now, the recording process can be done from your own computer and your own. I have a professional microphone, I have professional equipment here, but we had never dubbed from home before. I've done commercials, I've done audiobooks, but to dub from home was like a whole new venture that we had to, that the studios had to jump over that bridge during the pandemic and figure out how can we get the actors the videos that they can see that will play on their computers in time for them to dub to and
no,
record.
That actually, oh, I'm sorry. Keep going.
No, that's okay. That's essentially it. And so that's what we did. I have and for that one, I think I had the director on the phone. We may have had the client on the phone, or not on the phone, but in my headset connected to me via the computer. And I'm looking at the picture on screen as they are, and I have a copy of – I don't remember if I had a copy of the script or if the script was written underneath. It can vary. But anyway, that's the technique. So you've got three or four programs open at once, and quite often I'm running my own backup at my end of what I'm doing just in case they have an internet glitch. I can send them the entire three-hour or whatever it is session that I've recorded – the raw session unedited, and they can have that as a backup in case they have any dropouts from the internet failing. So it's quite a complex process that had to be mastered very quickly during the pandemic.
Now, that actually brings up some technical questions I have for you, and I'm glad you specifically mentioned. If you're comfortable, like this is not like a brand sharing or anything, but you said you have a professional microphone, and mm-hmm. I am interested in what kind of equipment people use. Do you mind telling us what kind of microphone you were using for this recording during the pandemic?
No, I'm using a C1, which comes from Studio Projects. It's about a $350 mic, I guess, something like that. I've had it for a while. I had it pre-pandemic as well. I was doing audiobooks with it, and I still do commercials occasionally for out-of-state clients that I'll record from home. So I use that. I use an Avid M-Box, so I can control volume not only of what the client is saying to me, but I can control my own volume at my end, so I can work with the engineer. You know, I'm pretty, at this point now, pretty much know how to adjust for what I'm doing, depending on what I'm doing, but I've still got the engineer there to help guide me if he wants me to turn up my gain or turn down my gain for different things that I'm doing. Obviously, if I'm yelling, I'll go off axis slightly on the mic and I'll turn down the gain. If I've got a soft character, I do a character called Speed the Turtle for something called Swan Princess. I've been doing that for about 25 years, and he's very soft. So for him, I really crowd the mic and have the gain up high. I run Pro Tools in the background. And Pro Tools is what I use to record that on, and then I send them a copy of. I use an Ethernet cable, so I turn off my Wi-Fi, and I use an Ethernet cable instead, which gives me a stronger signal when I'm connecting to a client who is distant from me. So that's
okay.
Kind of the tech
total
setup.
Sense.
And then we go into usually Source Connect, or there's a variety of different programs they use. From their end that I connect to with them, always using the highest recording of kilowatts or whatever. It gets beyond my understanding. But, you know, we obviously try to get to the best of everything for the best quality. And I connect to them. Usually I go into Google Chrome, which is can speak to most of these new programs. And then they send me something like Source Connect or some other program that I connect to, and I'm speaking to them. And then they may send me the video via Zoom or Skype or maybe via Source Connect. Every studio does it slightly different technically.
Yeah.
And sometimes
I
have to pass tests. A studio will say, before we'll record you from home, we want you to pass a sound test. And I have to do a sound test for them so they can test my equipment and whether there's noise, too much noise or from my room, and if the mic is good enough, and yakety, yakety, yak. I haven't failed yet, so knock on wood.
Well, that is actually what I'm working on. I just recently had – I not lost, but it was given back to the original person who owned it. I had a really nice headset that I used to use, like microphone and everything for the shows. But right now I'm on a pair of Bose headphones.
Mm-hmm.
Really nice headphones, but I keep joking with Carl and other people on the show that it picks up so much background noise because they're so sensitive that you can literally hear my neighbor fart from his house across the street. I mean, it's insane how great it is, but, you know, I'm working on a lower end setup. I have submitted a couple of things for, you know, some video game stuff, and so I've got like a basic but decent setup. Like, I'm working on a Yeti Blue. I've got my Scarlett 2, you know, kind of those things. But we're also, for the network itself, looking for better programs and equipment for everybody so that we can really make this sound as good as possible. And I want to say that you were one of the clearest and best sounding guests we've had. And I don't know if it's just your cell phone you're on or what.
Oh.
But it's amazing.
I'm on a landline right now, actually. I still keep a landline as well as a cell phone because I'm old school.
Can you hear a pin drop?
No.
But also, I do have a window open right now, but soundproofing is very important, and I have professional soundproofing in the office. When I record, I block that window with more soundproofing. So it's hearing your neighbor is not something you want to have happen. You want to have your recording booth or office as soundproof as possible. You don't want room noise. You don't want room echo. You want a really dead sound.
Exactly. And I haven't soundproofed or anything because I haven't gotten that far with it. But I do actually have a relatively closed off area for – I've had other people come to my house so that they can record, you know, voice auditions and stuff, because I'm one of the only people out here that has any sort of equipment like that. So but yeah, it's really interesting how things have changed through the pandemic, and people are discovering that I can do this from home, and like, everybody saves money and I get paid the same. This is the shit, man.
Yeah, some of the studios don't like it. Because not every actor has the best of setups, and sometimes they do get dropouts or they get problems connecting with them, and they get frustrated. And I've had it happen once or twice where I've had a problem connecting, and we've had to keep logging out and logging in and whatever. Generally, I don't. But I just had a session a week or so ago where the director was so frustrated that I didn't come into the studio. And I said, you know, even though the pandemic's getting better, I'm still nervous about it. And then we immediately connected. The engineer said, I love the sound, and everything was going great. And he kind of gradually chilled out. And he said, no, this is working fine. I'm sorry. He had a problem with somebody just prior to me where it took about 40 minutes for them to hook up properly and get everything going. So it has pluses and minuses, I guess, depending upon how well set up the actor is with what they've got. And the internet connection, you know, which you can't control.
Well, frankly, that just sounds like it's better for you, because if those other actors don't have as good a setup as Doug Stone does, then fuck them. Go with Doug Stone, because we know he's good, right?
Yeah, well, that's the adage that I was just listening to Ricky Gervais in an interview, and they said he was saying how he uses the same actors over and over. And he said, you know why? He said, it's not just that they're talented. They show up on time, and they're nice, and they're professional, and they memorize their lines, and they do the job. So that is a big part of my profession. There's a lot of people, particularly in higher echelons, who put on an act and put on a show, and it can be assholes. The biggest part of my job, the main thing is show up, be on time, be prepared, be nice, be easy to work with, be professional, know your job, do what you're supposed to do. Then if on top of that, if you're talented and you have all this other stuff you can offer, great. But meet that criteria first. Be nice. Be easy to work with. Make it where the director goes, I really want to work with Doug Stone again. That was great. He was so easy to work with, and we got the job done on time, and we had a few laughs, and everything sounded great. That's the person you want to be. Then you're going to have a 40-year career.
I've noticed that about Greg Davies, too. He is one of my favorite British actors, and pretty much everything that he's been in, he's got at least two or three of the same people that he always works with, and
mm-hmm.
they have such chemistry. They're so funny. They're so fun together, because I've even seen them do, like, his live show, Taskmaster and stuff like that, with these same people from, you know, all of these sitcoms and stuff he's done, and I really feel like the voice acting community is more prone to that kind of thing.
Yeah, that has been my experience. When I came to L.A., I was a theater actor and on-camera actor, voice actor. But very quickly here in L.A., I focused strictly on the voiceover. I did not like the atmosphere, even on auditions of on-camera. The atmosphere was different than the voiceover auditions. When I walked into voiceover auditions, everybody was friendly. Everybody was welcome. Oh, hi. I don't think we've met. How do you do? You know, I was a new guy. And they were all nice. And then I'd go to on-camera auditions here in L.A., and it was like, yeah, what have you got? Prove it. You know, whatever. There just was a bitterness, and I don't know. I didn't like the vibe too much. Didn't like the feel of it nearly as much.
It's very toxic. Yeah, exactly.
Indeed.
Like, people are, like, really fighting for this shit, and it just...
Well, even casting people can be bitter and... I don't know. I mean, there's some very nice on-camera actors, don't get me wrong, because I've met a lot of people in this business. You know, I've met Anthony Hopkins, and I've met Gary Goldman, and lots of well-known people, and most of them are very nice. But a lot of the people, some of the directors and some of the casting people, and I don't know, you know, there's a lot of money involved in what they do, and I guess they're under a lot of pressure, and sometimes, and some of the actors can be real assholes, and who needs it? I don't. Life's too short.
Absolutely. Now, one thing I do want to say is you can tell it's a wonderful thing that I have Rachel as my co-host, because she's the technical person, and I don't know shit about what you were talking about earlier with all the setup.
I can't go into any more depth than I did. I don't understand how any of it works, but I've had to learn those basics in order to record from home. I've had to learn just the basics of what equipment to use. But if you ask me how it works and what it's actually doing, I'm lost.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Carl knows exactly why I was asking you about all of that and explaining to you my setup, and he also knows that I was taking fastidious notes over here because that's what I'm here for.
Absolutely.
You know? I'm the woman. I don't get paid to think. I just get paid to write down the ideas of the men folk.
Oh, you darling little thing, you.
Yeah. From the South, I have to give you a little tip here. It's not you darling little thing. You got to say, bless your heart.
Oh, yeah. I wasn't, my vernacular wasn't correct, but right, bless your heart. Isn't she sweet? She's a little bit
there
slow.
You go.
We just love her to death.
You know, and
she's gonna make somebody just a fine wife someday. Just fine.
So, Rachel, hold on, guys, hold on. You know, the person that runs the show here wants to talk for a little bit.
Yeah, go for it.
No, you don't.
But Rachel definitely has some talent in voices, as you could tell. You know, I know you've been toying with the idea of doing some voiceover work. So when I told her that we were having you on, it was like she went crazy. And then, of course, there's somebody else in her family that's gone a little nutso with you being here. So is Rhiannon ready to come in?
Let me grab them real quick. I've got to take you off of my headset and put you on speaker, but let me bring them in here real quick. Hey, Riri,
okay.
Will you come here for a sec, please? this is my 12-year-old non-binary child who is a huge, huge fan of anime, and they like to watch the original language version so that they can kind of get a feel for it. But then they like to watch the dub and read the subtitles so that they can kind of figure out where things are going. And they were just hoping it would be okay for a second if they might be able to talk to you. So I'm going to take you off the speaker real quick or take you off my headset real quick. So give me just a second.
I will sip my coffee.
And that's always a good thing. Coffee is a good thing, trust me.
It is. It is. I'm not usually two cups a day, but today, in honor of you guys, I'm doing a second cup so that I won't fall asleep. You don't want to hear me. And here he is. And you...
All right. Well, guys, can you hear us?
Yes.
Yeah.
Can you say hello, Rhiannon?
Hi.
Hi there. How you doing?
Good.
Sorry, Rhiannon is very shy, but they were very excited to be able to say some things to you.
I'm very shy too, actually, but I pretend that I'm not. So that was what I would recommend to you. Do some acting and pretend that you're not shy.
I'm bad at acting.
Okay.
I don't know what to say.
Oh, good Lord.
Ask him about one of his characters that you like, Rhiannon.
Yeah, you were talking to me today and yesterday about all of the shows that you liked that he was in.
I forgot the name.
I'm guessing maybe Naruto. Would that be one of them?
No, I'm not that far into Naruto yet. It's Hunter x Hunter, really.
Hunter x Hunter?
Sorry, which one?
Hunter x Hunter.
Oh, Hunter, yeah, okay. I don't remember a whole lot about Hunter. I just remember doing it, but I don't remember a lot about it.
One Punch Man.
Oh, yeah, that was a fun series.
Yes, well, I'm sorry. Rhiannon is very shy and doesn't know what to say.
That's okay.
They just wanted to kind of come and tell you that they really enjoyed some of your work.
Well, thank you.
I do. You did a lot of work and a crap ton of things.
I've been lucky. I've been lucky and I've gotten to work on some pretty fun shows over the years. Yeah.
Hello.
And sorry, that's the 4-year-old who just wants to say hello to everybody. All right. Well, I'm sorry I embarrassed you like that, Ree. You guys go watch cartoons again. Okay. I'm sorry, not cartoons, anime. I'm putting you guys back on my headset.
Okay. Bye, Rhiannon. Bye, Brolin.
Okay, I'm sorry about that. Rhi has been really excited all day to talk to you, but then they kind of froze when I put them on the phone. They've never talked to somebody like you before and, like, seriously just got this stunned look like, oh, my God, what am I going to say? But they, my child, Rhi, actually introduced me to One Punch Man and Hunter x Hunter and Naruto. Naruto was the one that they kind of got into because the other kids in school were into it, but then they went further out. And, like, you have literally done so many things that they have shown me. Dot Hack Sign, let's see. And, by the way, somebody's got to take care of compiling your Wikipedia and your IMDb together because they are so there's so many things missing from each one.
Around the year of 2002 or 3, I stopped writing down things in my resume. So I've actually got sort of a project where I'm trying to go back over my paperwork from years back and trying to write down all the stuff that I've done with the goal of updating Wikipedia to actually represent more accurately all the different jobs that I've done. But I'm sure that they don't agree with each other, or sometimes names change. The names of shows change too.
Well, it's weird because your Wikipedia doesn't mention a lot of things that your IMDb does, and your IMDb doesn't mention a lot of things that your Wikipedia does. Like, you need to get the president of your fan club on that right now.
you got to get someone to merge all that stuff. That actually brings up a question that I have, because you've done all these works. When you do a job, how long does it take, generally? Is it a day and then you're done, or is it a certain amount of time, or does it vary?
It really varies. I mean, there's some things, some voiceover, I just did a job. Like, as I say, I did a thing called Swan Princess. It's been going on since the 1990s. and I play a character, a voice of character named Speed the Turtle. Well, Speed the Turtle has become much more of a subsidiary character. He doesn't have a lot to do. So I just recorded it from home the other day, and I'd say it took me about 35 minutes, 40 minutes to do my role in the film. There are other things you'll do where you're in a series, excuse me, and it may take four-hour sessions, either in studio or at home, to complete your work. It really depends on what you're doing. If you're in an animated series, then you're coming back each time to record a new episode. In the case of Mask, the first show I did here, I did 65 four-hour sessions because there were 65 episodes.
Yeah.
So it really depends on the kind of work you're doing.
So I've seen all of those.
And if you're doing a TV show or film looping, that might be anywhere from a 3 to 4 hour session. Or if it's a film, it could be 4 or 5 days. Like I did Lilo and Stitch, that lasted several days. The Grinch Who Stole Christmas, I think I did like 4 or 5 days of SAG work, you know, union looping work on that all day long. It really depends on the project. It differs so much on depending upon what you're doing. If you're generally asking about dubbing usually you get your work done in one session, certainly if it's a TV show or film. But again, it depends. If it's a series and you have a regular character, you're going to be back again a week or two later doing the next few episodes for a couple of hours.
Yeah.
So each of these jobs that you have, you know, pays a certain amount of money.
Mm-hmm. It varies from job to job, depending on the kind of work it is.
You know, and the thing is, with all this work, are you working like 52 weeks a year? Do you take time off?
Oh, well, I don't direct anymore. In the 80s, late 80s and 90s and early 2000s, I got super busy. I mean, there was times when I didn't sleep for 2 days. Literally did not sleep because I was preparing for – I'd be voicing all day, and then I'd go to a studio and direct from 6 o'clock to 1 a.m., then come home and work on a script through the night, and then go back and do it again. I don't work like that anymore. I'm too old for that. So at this point, I work an average – I don't direct or cast. I only do voice work. I just work as an actor, and I do 2 to 3 jobs a week. And they can vary from 1 hour to 4 hours on average. And that's what I do. I spend a lot of, sit on the board of a no-kill cat shelter, the Kitty Bungalow Charm School for Wayward Cats. I've been volunteering there since 2012, saving feral cats from the streets of L.A. So I also devote, now that I'm not doing casting and directing and writing and all that, I devote a fair bit of time to, let's say, public works or charitable work, helping animals. So that takes up some of my time, too, though not as much during the pandemic because I can't go into the shelter. But I still fundraise. I do 2 fundraisers a year. I do a comedy show. Because I used to do improvisational comedy, I know a lot of comics. We do a comedy show in the spring, and I do a Voices for the Voiceless auction, online auction in the fall with all my voiceover friends who donate swag, and we then auction it online and raise money for the shelter that way to help animals. So I have other things I'm involved in other than just acting these days.
Oh, you just made me so happy with that.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So just out of curiosity, you said you were friends with a lot of comics. We have a friend who's out in L.A. that's a comic by the name of Mark Scheffler. I just wondered if you knew Mark or not.
Oh, that name, Mark Scheffler.
He was the head writer of Charles in Charge for a while.
Oh, okay. Maybe I'm thinking of somebody else who has a similar name then. Now, I don't do stand-up. I did a little bit of stand-up in Toronto and didn't like it, but I did improvisation for a living. And when I first came to L.A. in the 80s, I was teaching improv, and I had Hank Azaria was one of my students, if you know Hank from The Simpsons and all TV work. Well, Hank was in 2 troops with me down here. He was in one of our troops one of our shows when he got discovered by The Simpsons. In fact, he was doing a show called An Evening on Thin Ice, and some of them came out to see him in the show. So I know these folks from way back when. So I don't know a lot of stand-ups who are younger ones. I tend to know more of the older crowd. But I do know some writers.
Mark was part of Mitzi's group down at the Comedy Club and worked with Robin Williams and that. But he was in the 70s and 80s.
Right. Yeah. I think I'm confusing him with another guy I know who actually helped us in the fundraiser, was part of our comedy show, has a similar name. But I don't think he's the same fella. But I do know, of course he's not doing stand-up, but Bob Rosenfarb was a showrunner for several TV shows. And some of these other guys that I know were showrunners and they were writers and for TV shows. And they like to do improv. Ken Levine wrote for, so many TV shows. What's the one that took place in the bar?
Cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers, yeah. He was a writer on Cheers and many other TV shows. So Ken comes out and does improvisation with a group, with a teacher called Andy Goldberg here, who has a group called Off the Wall that Mindy Sterling belongs to, if you know Mindy. They took part in the fundraiser along with some other stand-up comics, and they did some improvisation for us, which was really cool. So anyway, it's a huge community, and of course I'm not immersed in the comedy community, and now that I don't direct and cast, I don't know as many of the younger voiceover actors as I used to, but it's always fun when I do get to meet them, and I do know some of them, and once the pandemic ends, I'll get to meet more of them again, but now, of course, we're recording from home, so I get to meet them more online than I do in person, unfortunately, at this juncture.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a couple of questions before we head up here, and that's since we're coming near the top of the hour. Do you have a favorite role that you've portrayed over the years?
It's really hard to pick one. The Mask series that I did in 85, 86, which, you know, predates your time, was really important to me emotionally because it's what got me established here in L.A. And there was a character...
Oh, no, it predates my time, not his.
Okay, well, the lead character's name was Matt Tracker, and I played 8 characters on the series. There are still fan clubs for Mask around the world who contact me all the time. So that's a very important one for me, sort of emotionally, I guess. Psycho Mantis was a character that I did in Metal Gear Solid, a game in the early 2000s that makes it to a lot of people's favorite 10 villain lists. So that's also a favorite character for me for that reason. Also because I generally was playing a lot of heroes, and it's fun to also play bad guys. And there's a character in a film, I'm just looking at my own list here so I can remember the name to remind myself. Do I have it up on the wall and pictures from all these things? Well, Lilo and Stitch, it was a small character, but that was a lot of fun. What was it called? The House of... Oh, gosh.
Oh, you're talking about the... House of Thunder.
Thunder and the House of Mouse. Thank you.
I love that movie. My kid loves that movie. That movie is amazing. That is the one I was looking for a minute ago.
Oh, thank
Thunder
you.
Thunder and the House of Magic.
Well, I'm the magician, the old Bostonian magician in that.
Oh,
the
my
one
God.
Who adopts the cat.
Could you do it for me, please?
Oh, boy, I'm trying to remember. Look, it's Thunder. I haven't seen him in years. What a lovely little pussycat. Oh, dear, oh, dear. Come, children, let's have a story, shall we? He was somewhere in there. He was just this lovable old fellow, and he was so sweet. And it was right around when I had initially gotten involved with the shelter, and then within 2 years I get the role of this guy, and he adopts a kitten that gets abandoned, and it just touched my heart. It was really nice, and so that was one that I really enjoyed, and what touches me too is that one of the lady producers who now teaches, Mimi Maynard, apparently plays that for their students. At their voiceover class, she'll play portions of that to them as an example of, you know, a voiceover work and voiceover acting. So that's kind of cool too, that it still lives on in that regard.
Yes.
But yeah,
oh,
he was a
favorite
role. He was a great little. He was a great character. He was so loving
and so wonderful, and just the whole movie in and of itself is hilarious. It's full of innuendo. And not even gross innuendo, but it's definitely full of adult content and, you
it's
know,
for adults and for
things.
Children. It was for the whole family kind of idea, I think,
exactly.
The film where jokes for everybody.
That's why it worked so, so well was I just, that's one that I know it was a Netflix movie, but I've got to find a way to buy it on DVD. My family has to own it because we are cat people. I, too, have three adopted cats. So, yeah, I've completely forgot about that one, and thank you for bringing that up. There's so many more, and I'm looking at some of them that maybe you probably don't get asked about as much. Like, I was a huge fan of Outlaw Star, okay?
I remember the title, but I remember very little about it. That was a while back.
Yeah. The anime that I got into is some of the earlier stuff. I mean, I know you were a lesser role in Akira and stuff like that, but
At the time, I was directing. I had helped the fellow Kevin Seymour, who's passed away, who had to do with Akira and those shows. I had directed for him and then sent him a lot of actors that he then used in those shows when he started directing as well. And he was kind enough to want to cast me, but I was so busy directing and doing my own stuff that I would just go in once in a while and do a small role in one or two of the shows that he was doing. And he did some great shows. Like
he did. And see, like, you did Outlaw Star, you did Big O, which Big O was so short-lived, and that was so tragic. You were the Van in Cowboy Bebop. So all of these, Ninja Scroll, all that good shit.
Oh yeah, Ghost in the Shell, Dynasty Warriors I directed and then kept on with two or three characters. That's a game.
I mean, we've got Sky High, we've got Witch Hunter Robin. I mean, all of these I loved so much. And I'm noticing something. Who the fuck is Gully Jimson?
Oh, well, when I first started, I was nervous about doing non-union work. And so I used aliases. Gully Jimson is actually a character from a book called The Horse's Mouth about a painter.
I knew it was going to be a character. Okay, so keep going.
So when I was first down here and I didn't have union status and I was just nervous about everything and I thought and people advised me, they said, well, don't use your real name, you know, if you're nervous about it. And I thought, what will I use? And I thought, here's something really obscure that nobody will know from a book that I really loved when I was a teenager called, again, The Horse's Mouth. Which became a film with my favorite actor, Alec Guinness, the late Alec Guinness. And the name of that painter was British, was Gully Jimson. So that's why I used it.
Nice.
That is fantastic because that is actually probably why there's such a weird dichotomy between your Wikipedia and IMDb is because a lot of your credits, especially for those shows that I just mentioned, are credited as Gully Jimson.
Oh, are they? Well, those must be very early ones then, because I think I only used that in the 80s until I got myself established here and got in the union and yakety-yakety-yak. But I guess some of the early stuff was Gully. But the kids have figured it out. I mean, they put down what those names. They figured out what those names are somehow.
It's called the interwebbing.
Yeah. I guess they have their sources. I've had people write to me and ask me, so-and-so is the name given in this show, but I think it was really, you know, a certain actor. Can you tell me if it was or not? And I'm not going to out anybody, and I just say, I don't know. You know, even if I do know, I just say, I don't know.
Oh.
You'll have to ask the actor themselves. It's not for me to say.
I noticed another alias of yours, David Orozco.
Orozco, because I lived on Orozco Street. Yeah,
ah.
David O. Roscoe. Yeah.
Orozco.
But these are all way back in the 80s, those names.
No, I'm looking at David O. Roscoe from 2003.
That makes no sense at all. I wasn't,
Last Exile,
an internet
TV series, English voice version is David O. Roscoe.
The year may be wrong. There are a lot of things on here where the years are wrong. I mean, if I go, let me scroll down the IMDb here. They have 1972, The Adventures of Panda and Friends. Well, 1972,
yeah.
I wasn't doing voiceover work. I was a furniture maker in 1985. I might have been off in India or visiting San Francisco. The Panda show was done in the 1980s or 90s. So they've got the years completely wrong. Mobile Suit Gundam, 1981, not correct. Doug Tanyon and the Three Muskhounds, I directed and acted in that in about 1989. They have it as 1981. New Adventures of Gigantor, they have as 1980-81. That's when it was first televised in Japanese, but we didn't dub that until the 90s, where the original
Those
Bob Billion had passed
IMDb,
away.
They are
that's
just
in the IMDb.
To age you.
So these
bastards
things are
at IMDb.
These things are all, there's a lot of errors here with years. So believe me, if you're seeing David O. Roscoe in 2000, that, no. I haven't used that name, I don't think, since 1989 or 90.
Wow. Well, thank you for bringing that up. I never knew that that was an issue with IMDb. But
well, yeah,
I've
talked to other people on that, too.
Well,
all kinds
and
of things are wrong. Until they get to Shock Chamber, which was a TV film I did in Canada in 1985, and that is correct. And Death in Hollywood, I'm just looking at the year. Commando Games, those are all things I did on camera work in Canada, and those are all correct. But all the stuff before that is the years are all incorrect because I was not doing any of those shows. Those were all done here in L.A. after I came to L.A., and I didn't do dubbing work until 87, 88. So all the years are incorrect on all these shows from 72 to 85.
Well, I am just learning how IMDb actually works now that I've been, you know, interviewing actors and voice actors and directors and stuff, and I just found out that you had to submit your own shit to IMDb. So,
well, you can. I didn't submit this stuff, but I clean up the IMDb. There's a country singer named Doug Stone, and he changed his name
out.
To Doug Stone. And he had his credits mixed in with mine, and I looked at the IMDb when it was new to me, and I went, what? I hosted the Country Music Awards? What? He voiced on Lilo and Stitch? No. So I had to request the IMDb to correct this stuff, and once in a while I will ask them to correct something, but it's such a big hoop to jump through that I just can't be bothered if they get years wrong or whatever. I just don't want my credits going to the wrong guy or his credits on mine. I don't want to be credited for work I didn't do. So I got him that straightened out where he got his credit back for country music stuff. But I can't be bothered to correct all this stuff. You know, maybe someday when I get all my credits written down properly, I'll hire somebody and say, please go to Wikipedia and go to the IMDb and straighten it all out. But it's not that important. I'm working. I'm happy. I get hired no matter whether they make mistakes or not. I still get hired. So it's not that a big issue with me. It doesn't change my life if
I
get it wrong.
Absolutely.
That's okay.
So, Doug, we're up to the hour here, and we just want to have you give a chance and do a little plug. Please plug your work with the animals again.
Sure. We're here in L.A., and it's called the Kitty Bungalow Charm School for Wayward Cats. And what we specialize in is we are catching, humanely catch feral cats, get them spayed or neutered. We're a no-kill shelter. No animal is ever euthanized, and it's given every chance that we don't care if they're blind, deaf. I have a special needs kitty right here who has cerebellar hypoplasia. Rocky McWiggles, one of my cats that I adopted. He has a neurological disorder where he has difficulty walking, but he's a lovable little boy and he loves life and he's an adoptee. So we'll rescue cats off the streets, get them neutered and fixed to help reduce the population humanely. without euthanizing cats. Instead, we encourage everybody to fix their animals, dogs, cats, whatever they may be. So that's our sort of our mandate. And we also adopt cats from our shelter. We send cats into working cat programs where they live on farms or they become mousers. And they can live their lives while being fed and taken care of. And if they're not the kind of cats you can adopt into your home, you can have them in your place of business instead. So you can look it up online, the Kitty Bungalow Charm School for Wayward Cats. You'll see our presence online. We're quite well known and I think quite well respected. We're part of the No Kill LA Coalition, NKLA, and we're a registered nonprofit. I'm a monthly Patreon giver. I give money to the shelter every month. I do fundraising, and I volunteer hands-on with the kitties. And anybody can help us out and is welcome to become, if they're in L.A., to foster kittens or volunteer with us, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay. Well,
and don't forget
That is really cool. That is really cool. And don't forget also that Doug is one of the featured actors in the new Flix anime that just, I guess it just premiered at the beginning of July.
Yes,
and that's
beginning
of July,
yeah.
Evil.
Right.
So do you have anything else coming up that you're doing that's going to be released soon?
Nothing that I can talk about. We signed non-disclosure agreements, and people like Netflix in particular are very fussy. I mean, you can get in big trouble if you talk about projects before they announce them. So I let me just say that I'm doing a lot of Netflix projects all the time, so there will be more projects out on Netflix, but nothing I can discuss.
Okay.
I can say that for those who like Swan Princess, that we just recorded a Swan Princess. I didn't sign a non-disclosure for that. So there will be a new Swan Princess for those who are fans coming out, I believe, in the next couple of months. And that's about it. Yeah, I'm never sure of where the non-disclosures are and at what point they're at, and I don't want to announce anything before they announce it. Again, you can get in a lot of trouble for doing that. So,
oh, absolutely.
Well, when they
announce it,
you tell us, and we'll announce the fuck out of it.
Okay. Well, when I hear about it, I have to say I don't follow my own.
Okay, go ahead, Doug. I'm sorry.
That's okay. I don't follow my own voice trail very carefully. I mean, I love the process and I do the work, but even my Facebook page, I don't have a fan page. I'm mainly friends. Most of my friends are in animal rescue on Facebook. Some are voiceover actors, etc. So I don't tend to really promote it a lot, the voiceover work. I'm thrilled if people like it and enjoy it. For me, it's the process. I'm thrilled that I'm still working and that people still find me a viable performer and still want to hire me, but I don't promote the work a whole lot. So I have to say I don't as much. The younger actors do, and I understand it because they're more enthused, and they're raised in the generation of anime. I predate anime. I was there at the beginning of anime and the beginning of the games. I was doing it when we were doing work on VCRs, on that's what we'd record on, and you play it on a VCR. So I go way back in the old days, voiceover work. We'd go from cave to cave and do voices, and they'd write the script on the cave wall with okra, and we'd just say the words and make the sounds to entertain the other cave people. And that was the beginning.
One of the things we like to do here on the podcast is really promote people who do the work, who may not be as famous as other people, but the workman-like people in the business.
Mm-hmm.
And you certainly are one of them. So anytime that you've got something going on or that, you are more than welcome to come back, Doug. Seriously,
well,
we'd love to have you back.
I appreciate it. Maybe when the Voices for the Voiceless auction comes up, which should be in October or November, because it might be fun for your listeners to hear what voice actors are participating in it, because we get some pretty good names. A lot of anime people are kind enough to participate and whatever. So maybe at that point I can come on and talk about that with you.
Oh, absolutely. Love to. And to get a couple people on, that would be great. And we'd be glad to promote something like that. Absolutely.
Cool.
Oh, man. Absolutely. Animal Rescue, that is the shit.
Yeah, it's Animal Rescue and voiceover. So what's better than that, right?
Exactly.
What's better than that is having us involved with it. I'm just saying.
There you go.
There you go.
Yeah.
Doug, I want to thank you very, very much for being on. It's been a pleasure. I really appreciate it.
Oh, likewise.
So
I've enjoyed it.
Rachel, any last words for Doug before we let him go?
Sorry for being such a talkative nerd, but thank you for being here. Yay!
My pleasure. My pleasure. I enjoyed it. I didn't even finish my coffee. I was talking so much.
I didn't finish mine either. So.
Again, thank you very much. We're going to go into what we like to call housekeeping.
Housekeeping.
Right.
Yep, and do a little bit of promotion for ourselves. So you're welcome to stay if you like, Doug. No problem at all. Yesterday we had a wonderful, wonderful guest on, and that would be Joe Lansdale. And Joe has been on the show a number of times. And if you don't know who he is particularly, he is the writer of Bubba Hotep and Incident on and Off a Mountain Road for Masters of Horror. He wrote a couple episodes for Sex, Love, and Robots, a number of different things.
Three
Captain
episodes.
Leonard series, and he was a great guest, and we were glad to have him. So that was yesterday. Now, tomorrow, I will be doing a commentary watch with John Killian on a movie called The Dark Song, which is an Irish religious horror movie. And what do you say about me in religious horror movies, Rachel?
That if I ever made a summoning circle for Carl, I would forego even the coffee and cigarettes and cheese and just stick a horror movie in there. Or even better, like, if there was a serial killer in Carl's house, all he would have to do is say, this movie, so it's religious themes and scary shit. And Carl would pop out from under the couch and be like, kill me now. But can we watch this movie first? Like, he would just totally give himself up. Carl is a religious horror movie slut. Just slutty McFlut slut.
Well, you know, when you have a master's in church music, a minor in theology, and a minor in philosophy, yeah, I'm there, without a doubt.
And you're about 6 degrees of twisted, yeah.
You're
there wholeheartedly.
Too.
And that's why we love
that
you, Carl.
Absolutely. And on Thursday, we're going to have author and writer Patrick Crane on. And we're going to do a Robert Altman retrospective of his films, particularly his films, not his TV work. And so we're going to be doing that on Thursday. Then on Friday in the Cathode Ray Mission, Adam is going to do a show on a English miniseries called Our Friends in the North. So we're going to be doing that on the 16th. And then we have a lot of things planned, but nothing set in stone. But I will tell you this, on Saturday, I'm not sure exactly what time it will be, but we are going to do another commentary watch of our 70s Sims. And right now we have scheduled the Nickel Ride. So we'll be doing that on Saturday. And then the week after, still trying to set some things up. Hopefully by Thursday I'll have that all set up. So that's what we've got so far. But in the future, we have two shows that will be happening. One is we will, in early August, we're going to have Stephen Eckelberry in. Stephen, you may not know his name, but you certainly know his wife who passed away. And that would be Karen Black. So we'll be doing a show on Karen Black
There's a new album coming out of songs that she recorded while she was doing Nashville as promos, and that's coming out. There's also going to be a documentary out on her, from what I understand. So we'll be doing that. We're also going for one of our ISF podcasts in August. Also, we've got Trent Harris coming back with us. Trent is the director of Reuben and Ed, and he has a new movie out, which is a sequel, direct sequel to Reuben and Ed, called Echo Lake. And if you want to really get to know a really strange, wonderful Utah filmmaker, you got to join us for that. So we'll be doing that in August. You've got anything else that I've forgotten, Rachel? Because
well,
I think there's one other that we're planning.
There is. I'm not quite sure on the date on this one, but we are planning
24th,
yet
more
another,
than likely.
24th,
more than likely,
likely
July
then.
24th.
Okay, so more than likely on July 24th, we are planning yet another episode of Down the Rabbit Hole with Rachel, and this time we'll be doing novelty songs. And no, I'm not talking about songs about your ice cream treats. Just interesting, fun songs that came out in the day, like not this one specifically, but as an example, you know, the One-Eyed, One-Horn, Purple People Eater.
Yep.
Things like that. That is a novelty song, but definitely not one we're featuring on the show. No offense.
No, and we will not be featuring any ones by Weird Al Yankovic either.
No.
These are non-Weird Al Yankovic ones.
I mean, that's just too easy.
Yeah, that's way too easy. That man is the king of parody songs and novelty songs, without a doubt. But we're going to do it as a sort of a history lesson, too, because we're going to go from the early 50s till now, and we're going to have things represented for each of the decades. So that'll be fun.
Yep. Absolutely.
That'll be fun.
And we're still planning more and more things in the future. We've still got some past guests that weren't able to make it that we're trying to get back on schedule with. So... I personally am looking forward and hoping to us being able to get back into contact with Tony Strauss.
Tony Burgess. Tony
Burgess. That's what I meant. Why did I say Strauss?
Yes.
I don't even know. But yes,
No. Tony Strauss is a friend of the podcast. Trust me. I know Tony real well. So you've heard me talk about him. I'm sure.
That's what it was. But yeah, Tony Burgess, I really hope we can do that one at some point, you know, here in the next few months. But beyond that, we're digging and creating and meeting new people every day that want to tell us all about the cool shit they're doing.
Just like tonight. And again, we want to really thank Doug Stone for being with us. It was a
thank
real
you so
pleasure
much.
To come on. Okay, so we are going to say good night, people.
Good night, people.
Good night, Rachel. Good night, Rachel. Good night, Carl. Good night, John Boy. Good night.
Good night. Good night.